to Talk is Jericho. It's the Pod of Thunder and Rock and Roll. And today, Suicide Silence brings the rock and roll back to TIJ. Guitarist Mark Hulman and singer Eddie Hermida are here. And yes, they are going to address the petition that got started a couple weeks back to try and stop the release of their brand new record, which came out today. The new record's self-titled, and you'll find out why coming up in the show. There's a very good reason. Yeah, there's actually fans that are petitioning for the album not to be released. I mean, are those even fans? I mean, calm down. Listen to the music. Listen to the rock and roll, man. You're going to hear also what it was like for Suicide Silence to continue on after the tragic death of their founding singer, Mitch Lucker, who was killed in a motorcycle accident. Mark talks about that terrible day, and he and Eddie recount the story of how Eddie came to join Suicide Silence and save them from total demise. But what it's been like for him the last few years to win over Mitch's fans and honor his memory at the same time. Of course, we're going to talk about the new Suicide Silence album, which is a huge departure for the band. It's their second with Eddie and their first with legendary producer Ross Robinson. We got some studio stories, some touring stories, some life stories, some making video stories, some trombone stories, some Suicide Solution stories, because I'm an idiot, keep calling them Suicide Solution, all kinds of other crazy stuff with Mark and Eddie. But before we get to Suicide Silence, here's how you can become a part of the Talk is Jericho Army. This is not the Kiss Army, it's the TIJ Army. Sign up for the Talk is Jericho automated email service at podcast1.com/Jericho. You'll be in the know when it comes to the show and be able to share all of your favorite episodes with a single click of a button. Join at podcast1.com/Jericho. You'll find out about all the guests every week, bi-weekly, what we're going to talk about, the topics, all that other stuff. So podcast1.com/Jericho. Go do it now. All right. Also, something else I want you to do. You know I'm able to do this podcast for you for Toy Speak for free because of the amazing sponsors like NatureBox. Not just supporting this show, NatureBox is supporting my hunger and keeping me snack-filled on the road. It's making my snacks much tastier, much healthier when I go on the road. I throw a couple NatureBox snacks in my carry-on, and I'm good to go for a long day of travel, long flights overseas to Germany, Nuremberg, Germany, like I'm here today. And you longtime Talk is Jericho fans know that my go-to snacks are the coconut cashews. Shoes. I always have those on hand. But if that's not your thing, guess what? NatureBox has literally hundreds of other choices, including dried fruit, granola, nuts and seeds, a bunch of other great snacks like white cheddar caramel popcorn, vanilla bean wafers, nom noms. They got something for everyone. Nom nom nom, banam nom, doo doo doo. Phenomena. And you'll feel good about eating NatureBox snacks because they got no artificial colors. Check. No artificial flavors. Check. No artificial sweeteners. Check. All the snacks are made up with high quality ingredientes. And if you ever try something you don't like, NatureBox will replace it for free. Okay? NatureBox delivers their snacks right to your front door, and they've recently made their service even better. Now you can order as much as you want, as often as you want, with no minimum purchase required, and you can cancel at any time. Check out their snack catalog at naturebox.com/Jericho. And when you place your first order, you'll get 50% off. That's right, 50% off your first order at naturebox.com/Jericho. Get your healthy snack on, have it delivered right to your front door. Just go to naturebox.com/Jericho. That's naturebox.com/Jericho. Have the greatest snacks, the tastiest snacks, the healthiest snacks you can possibly have. NatureBox, go check it out. naturebox.com/Jericho. Your figure and your stomach will thank you.
Talk is Jericho.
And one of the things that he did was Zappa said, okay, you have to transpose all the guitar solos onto a piccolo.
Oh, shit.
You know,
yeah, yeah.
So he did it, and then there was one song that I'm not a muso, but the key couldn't be translated into piccolo or something like this.
That's what I was like, bass or treble.
Yes,
or something like
and
that.
He took it back to Zappa and said, "This one can't be translated into piccolo." And Zappa went, "You passed the test."
Yeah, and nice.
Make sure that you that is actually awesome. Doing that. Yeah,
that's cool. Right? Well, then I feel good for questioning that. I was like, "That's not."
Yeah, see, you know, and you must be a muso, Eddie, yeah, right? Yeah. So
I played trombone in like pretty much from second grade on to
me too.
Really?
Oh, nice. No shit.
I made the cardinal mistake of giving up guitar lessons to take up trombone.
Wow.
That is the biggest
thinking
mistake.
Like, well, listen, how many guitar players are there? If I can get the rock and roll gig as a trombone
this
player,
is going to get me laid.
This is going to get me laid. Right. And my teacher was this guy, Brad Roberts, who was the singer of the Crash Test Dummies.
Yeah. Oh, shit.
You know that song?
Yeah, yeah.
So he grew up in Winnipeg, and he was my guitar teacher.
Hell yeah.
So I quit Brad Roberts to go play trombone.
What the fuck?
Really?
What happened
the coolest thing you could have ever done, dude.
How did you
get into trombone into heavy metal?
Okay, so I was we had a they called them assemblies, you know, the multi-purpose room where we played basketball and ate our food. One day they just ushered all the kids from our elementary school into this place, and they had this like quintet of people who were basically showing what appreciation of music is to, you know, to people who didn't love music. I grew up loving music. My mom was a big Beatles fan.
Right.
So like rock and roll and music was always ingrained in my body. My mom sang, so, and she had a really beautiful voice. So I was always just really enthralled by the sounds of music. And all these people come in and I'm like watching these people explain to other people, like they're taking the Pink Panther music and and transposing it to be really pretty or really evil sounding, and then they
because Pink Panther's diminished, so you can move that around into many different
interesting, and they were like kind of dumbing it down for children, you know, like, and doing this big assembly, and one of the guys played trombone, and when they did the
isn't
that a trumpet though?
No, maybe it's a saxophone.
Pink Panther, oh, okay.
It's a saxophone. Yeah. But everybody was playing it and doing their renditions, and then they were doing like, oh man, you can totally change the vibe of a conversation. And they had two people acting, and the trombone player was playing the music, and it made it sound really evil at one point. And I was like, this thing is sick.
So you wanted to do evil trombone?
Dude,
the most evil trombone.
I just thought it was such a versatile thing. I was like, this is the instrument. I had a calling to it. And then from there, I started playing. And
he's good, too.
And like,
I won awards. He busts out and starts busting Star Wars and shit right away. Like, I don't know.
I was thinking like AC/DC, Long Way to the Top, if you want to rock and roll. They had Bond playing the bagpipes.
Yeah.
You guys need a Suicide Silence song with you busting out a wicked trombone lead.
Next record.
We had all of our instruments in the room when we were writing this recent record. Uh-huh. He had his trombone, but pretty much everybody that was like, once you busted it out, it's like, what are you going to do with that?
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, it doesn't quite fit.
Yeah.
That's funny because in the WWE, there's this act, New Day, the New Day. I don't know if you guys are wrestling fans, but one of the guys comes down to the ring with a trombone.
What?
And he's playing the trombone. Like, he's made the trombone like a mainstream
because
the thing is like New Day rocks, people say. He's like,
okay,
and it's like, dude. And so then
that's pretty good.
About 6 months ago, we did a little thing where I had to grab his trombone and start playing it. I had to practice like for a while to get the embouchure right.
Yeah,
that's the one thing that goes away, man. Like guitar where you just lay it down,
dude,
right?
I picked it up for like maybe 30 minutes and I put it down and my lips were swollen. It looked like I just got a collagen implant, and I was like, ow, dude, man,
it's like the
my chops are gone, dude.
What's the guy's like, what a wonderful world, whoever that guy is. He had those big giant cheeks from blowing. Louis Armstrong. The giant frog cheeks. It's so something you never thought you'd hear discussed with Suicide Silence, trombone and brass instruments, but that's what we do here.
That's where vocals come
sure
from.
It's core.
You know, it's like, I mean, it shows you the positioning of the air and how to manipulate a note and where to find the note. There's no like button you can press and create a note, so you have to find the from your mouth. One of the lessons that I learned from a badass jazz trombonist is he told me to put the mouthpiece to my mouth and do a scale, so do a full major scale with just my mouth and the mouthpiece.
Oh, okay.
And from there, it taught me how to manipulate a note without moving the slide. So it was like, that was like groundbreaking. It blew my mind that you could do that.
Well, one of the big, I know, vocal warm-ups that a lot of guys do, including Chuck Billy that night when we did the Metal Allegiance thing, was they do the... Which is totally, you're acting like you're blowing into brass instrument.
Brass instrument. It controls your diaphragm.
Yeah,
that's what it is. It all goes hand in hand. Air instruments. That's all this is.
You're singing heavy metal or singing, you know, a jazz thing, it still comes from the same concept of how you get your vocal control.
Exactly. When you said trombone, it made perfect sense. I mean, at Metal Allegiance, I was completely blown away. I'm not trying to toot your horn right now, but
no pun intended.
kind of.
But that went right over my head too.
What are you talking about? Oh yeah, trombones.
but I have to be candid and say I wasn't privy to Fozzy and your skill. So when you're on stage
vocal
with Mark,
prowess.
When you're on stage with Mark, and you're all of a sudden you're just belting out these Halford highs, and I was just like, I was so like, oh my god! And not, it's because you're a trombone player. Man.
That's exactly why, man.
Chalk it up, dude.
But we're here with Eddie and Mark from Suicide Silence, and it's funny because I'm glad we got to set this up. Eddie and I were going to do this. I think we're probably with you as well, Mark.
Yeah.
At NAMM, which we're talking about, is the biggest. Like, holy shit! There's so much stuff going on.
Yeah.
And our mutual publicist George, great guy, is like, you got to do Suicide Silence. I'm like, well, maybe we can do 11 or 12, and then we get there. Rehearsal and there's 18 songs that these guys want to learn. I'm like, dude, you can't do 18 songs in an hour. We'll figure it out. And so it didn't
work out, right?
It's always that way, right?
We'll make it happen.
We're all professionals, you know? And so we did do the Metal Legions, which was great. You did 5 minutes alone with Carla and the guys. And
that whole show was sick.
Very cool, right?
So like, it's badass. I kept saying this to my friends and my girlfriend. I was like, dude, you know, the biggest thing is to see all these names, these big names that you attribute with ego. Mm. A lot of people like to go, oh, ego this, oh, ego that, oh, this guy's this, this guy's that. And then you actually put all these guys in a room together, and when we start dick and fart jokes and start talking about, oh man, who's having a whiskey with me, or who's having a shot of vodka right before we go on stage, I'm a little nervous. And then you're like, you're nervous?
You got Chuck Billy's there, and Alex Skolnick, and Mark Asquida, and Mike Portnoy, and Charlie Benante, and Gary Holt, and the list goes on and on. Billy Sheehan.
Yeah, man.
Showing up to do an Exodus tune. Like, it was just a great mix of dudes. And like you said,
Phil Demmel.
Great player. Yeah. He might have been the best guitar player on stage that night, I think.
He did every single
Skolnick.
Song.
Skolnick kind of like
Skolnick is a wizard. But I'm just talking like Phil held that together like watching the drummer for Make the Change Now.
Yeah.
Like, okay, it's your soul. He was almost
he's a
like
jammer.
He was the musical director of that thing. You know what I mean?
I was like feeling that same thing, and like I would look over to him and be like, are we nailing it right now?
You were treating him like you treat me on stage.
Yeah.
I watched you walk over there and like almost give him the microphone like you would to me, and I'm like, don't do that to Phil right now, he probably doesn't want to sing. And then you're like, you didn't do it.
That's exactly the vibe that I had I would normally give the mic to Mark right now. Oh wait, he's not Mark. All right,
were you there, Mark, that night? Oh, were you? I didn't even know.
I was hanging out I was watching with Jeff Loomis in the back all the rest of
name dropper
there. Dude, Jeff Loomis though,
another
it's like the Ripper's
player.
Like when I'm at NAMM, like being a guitar player, musician guy, like I'm always just kind of gravitated to be like around the sick Rippers, and there was like a corner at that show where it was just a bunch of Rippers all watching this show. It was super cool. It was like, and then just you going out there, I still like gave it up to him. I was like, after he was done, I was like, Eddie, remind me that you are like one of the best vocalists in metal right now. I was like, that was so sick.
Just kick
stop it.
No, stop it.
Right now.
Continue. Stop it. Continue. Stop it. Continue.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Please.
Let me hear that again. But stop. Please.
How did you get involved with that, Eddie?
Mark Menge. I guess. So Nuclear Blast is the label that puts on
Metal Legions,
and I guess Mark went, do you have any artists that are available? And we have, you know, we want to do 5 minutes alone or I'm Broken by Pantera. And Tommy Jones he's the art director for Nuclear Blast. And he said, and he's been a longtime friend of mine through the heavy metal scene. He was very involved with his production company and making videos and doing DVDs for bands. And he and I hit it off. We smoked weed together. That's how you bond in this world, man. You do the drugs, and then everything gets
Seems so clear.
Everything seems so clear,
except the hard stuff.
Yeah.
Get that out of there.
Yeah, it's not the days for that anymore. But him and I just hit it off, and he suggested that I would be perfect for a Pantera, you know.
Yeah, it was great, because I know they had that song on the set list, and it was like, who are we going to get to sing this? And,
yeah.
Because you know, it's me and Mark can't do that.
It's one of my favorite bands of all time.
Right.
You know, I remember getting carried in a mosh pit up to the front, and Phil high-fiving me, and I was like, I need to be a singer in a band!
and you are! And here you are! Dreams coming true!
So it was a big deal for me. It was a really cool thing. I was really honored to be in that circle of of guys that I really look up to.
Yeah.
And being in just in that presence and then going up there and doing just my thing it, yeah. and getting accepted. It was, it felt really nice.
It was a lot of fun.
Yeah,
man.
a lot of fun.
It really was. And it's perfect timing too, because you were out there spreading press for yourself and the band with the new record, Suicide Silence, exactly. which is self-titled.
Yep. Yeah,
Suicide Silence.
Record. Yeah.
Which I always have a trivia question. Can you name a band that has the name of the band that has a self-titled record and a song on the album that's called that?
That's my favorite joke. I'm always like, oh, Black Sabbath, off the record Black Sabbath, released in 19 Black Sabbath, like the year, or like Iron Maiden's Iron Maiden
right.
off of the record Iron
that's
Maiden,
exactly
released
right.
in 19 Iron Maiden.
So
I can just throw it in the year.
Iron Maiden, yeah.
I really wanted to name the song Silence, Suicide Silence.
Just for that purpose.
Not for that purpose. It was like the song that was defining us, and I didn't really think about that.
Mm-hmm.
And then one of my buddies back home, he's like, dude, you can't do that. That's like Suicide Silence off the record Suicide Silence and the song
that
Suicide
rules.
Silence.
What a, what a
bad company's bad company off a 19 bad company.
why did you decide to call the record Suicide Silence?
Man, we're semi-calculated in all of our doings, and I think we just said it after our first record. Like, if we last to our fifth record, let's do a self-titled, because probably that would be out of our senior record and into like a unknown type of
into our university
career.
Record, right?
Yeah, our university
senior high
record.
School, university, that's
exactly.
Graduating.
I don't know. I will say, probably because of the Black Album, you know, from early on, we've always kind of followed footsteps of a lot of our favorite bands, and we never really knew that we would last this long.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, we're here. And then once we met Ross Robinson, who produced it, who's a major influence on all of us.
And he's known for
self-titled.
Self-titled records.
Like Slipknot, Korn.
The Cure.
Wow, he did The Cure also.
Yeah,
definitely a very polished producer, very legendary producer.
I wouldn't call him polished. I mean, he's known for his rawness. But
polished in his own way. Polished, a refined
I guess
rawness.
Polished resume, I guess.
Yeah, definitely.
Basically a very legendary
dude,
producer.
For sure.
Yep.
How did you end up working with him?
Well, it was a long time coming. We pretty much figured out when we were in the studio that everything we've done almost led us to bring us to Ross Robinson. Like when we did our first record with John Travis, he came at us as a producer and said, you guys are amazing live. We're going to record you live, and you're just going to play the songs, and that's how we're going to capture you, because you guys are such a live force.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like a kind of a Ross Robinson angle. And John was kind of, you know, bouncing on the fact that we're influenced from a lot of things that Ross did. And then every step along the way, it's just we're like closer and closer to meeting Ross and getting in there with him. And he, like you're saying, and he's a renowned producer, and coming from our like death metal roots, it's kind of hard to get in to record with somebody like Ross.
Yeah.
But, you know, with this, it was, you know, we'd met him previous, you know, before we started. And, we were in the position where it's like, you know what, this is the time where we take our band in a different direction, where we like shock our fans, shock the heavy metal world, and do something really outside of our wheelhouse. And that's when we're like, Ross is the guy for sure for this. Let's get him, you know, get him out here, talk to him. And it was just like sparks right away.
Mm-hmm.
It was just, you know, he was reading right into us and just, you know, saying everything the way that we were feeling about, you know, just putting fear aside of, you know, anticipating maybe fans not liking something, or, you know, maybe having bad reactions, because we've got such a niche that we've really created for ourselves, and getting outside of that niche is scary, because people will talk shit. And
so what did you do on this record that's so completely different from the past?
Okay, so
because if you're listening to your first single, Doris, I mean, it's still blisteringly heavy. There's still screaming your ass off in a good way.
Yep.
I didn't really see what the kerfuffle was about, because some fans,
dude,
as we'll talk about, there's a petition
like
to not have this album released, which I love
it,
like,
too.
Like, under what grounds? Like,
who is going to take that seriously?
The judge of rock will go, yes, this album is not coming out.
You know, the Nuclear Blast is going to go, you know what, you know that money that we just fronted you guys so you guys could record this record, you know, just
Put it in your pocket. Don't worry about
63
it.
63 fans have demanded it does not come out, and we're going to listen to them.
The biggest
it's
difference.
It's Eddie's fault.
It's 100%
of course, you're going to get the blame. We'll talk about that too.
I think the biggest thing that is different on this record is that it's not. It's not as heavily influenced by death metal. It has a lot more nuance from different areas of rock and roll and music in general. I mean, the more
melodic singing, singing.
Clean singing is the easiest target, but the music in itself is allowing clean singing. A lot of our stuff was atonal. We're known for the 1-0-1-2-3-0 breakdowns and the dun 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 dun. It's very death metal.
Our music was almost anti music when we first started. You know, we just wanted to piss people off with our anti-tradition with the songs, which is what we kind of built it around. Mm-hmm. And this time it was like chord progressions, changes, key changes, things that are part of music. Exactly.
Yeah.
And that is, as weird as it is to say, that's such a big difference for our music and listeners to hear all of a sudden a chorus with chord progression.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's actually not something we've really done.
But isn't that, and it's one of the things, like, listen, we're all music fans here, and no one a bigger Metallica fan than me, I'm sure all of us, but I know from my experience, was a Metallica fanatic. Now, yep. I joined in on Ride the Lightning, but then hearing the blowback to Fade to Black at that point in time, people just hating the fact that there was acoustic guitar on their second record, and then move forward to the Black Album, which you mentioned. I hated it when it first came out because I was a Justice guy.
Yep,
then I hated Load when it came out. You know, you go back and listen to them. Obviously, Black Album is the best, and Load is actually pretty damn good too,
taken
for what it is.
Yeah.
So fans always have this problem when a band evolves.
Yeah, and it's, I don't think it's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, I'm taking it for what it is, which is we're doing something.
Mm-hmm.
Complacency would have been a problem to me. Hey, you guys really nailed it on the head. Coming from a 15-year-old kid, that means we're not doing our job.
Right.
You know, these kids don't know about Metallica. They don't know about Judas Priest. They don't know. You know, those aren't the metal that I come from isn't what they come from. Mm-hmm. So what they come from is us. And if we change it up, we're messing with their identity, man. We're really throwing a spoke in their a wrench in their spokes.
Into the spoke,
You know, and it hurts them, you know, it bums them out. You know, that's why I don't take any of that hatred or anything of that, like, of that nature.
I wouldn't even say hatred. It's more like a hesitation.
Exactly.
Sure. You know, resistance. Wanting to resistance.
Yeah,
because if you look at the greatest bands of all time, and we're doing this right now on the new Fozzy record, it is different from what we're known for, but it's not completely different from who we are as a band.
Sure.
It's the same thing as you talk about, you know, Kiss, I Was Made for Loving You, or The Stones, Miss You, or Rod Stewart, Do You Think I'm Sexy? Yeah. They went disco. It's not disco.
No.
It's just a disco beat to it, but it's still Kiss.
I mean,
it's a Kiss song if I've ever heard one.
Yep. Yeah.
You know, and you're talking about the songs that you're doing. It's like the best bands, if it's Zeppelin or U2 or Sabbath or
Beatles.
Guns N' Roses, Beatles, they have different sounds.
Changes. By
changing.
Black Sabbath, dude. Changes.
Do you, exactly.
That is like
Planet,
the,
you know, Planet Caravan.
Or Tequila Sunrise.
Sure, they're not Sabbath tunes per se.
Yeah.
Not Junior's Farm, but it was Eyes of whatever. Something about Junior and a farm and on a Sabbath tune.
Oh,
I'm gonna get flamed for it.
Yeah, right.
Send complaints at Talk to Jericho. Through Junior's eyes, I think.
Yeah,
it's called.
Right.
Anyways, a lot of.
I don't know what the hell you guys are talking about.
But that's to be expected. I think you should do that as a band.
Yeah, man.
Because there's only a couple bands, Slayer, AC/DC, that can do the same record for 30 years and do it well, but I'm not sure that's...
And honestly, in the last 10 years, it's been... The fans have run the underground scene, which is... The underground is supposed to be known for checks and balances, I guess you could say. You know, like, hey, you know, these metal bands are putting out pop records? Cool, well, there's a sick underground movement that's going to give you everything that you don't want.
Right, sure.
You know, and we were the underground. Our fans are made in that world. They're complacent to replaced sounds in the studio, cheap recordings, because underground bands don't make a lot of money. It's a small niche. And when it's time for us to spread our wings as a band, we've been doing it for 10 years, it's I want to do something a little bit different in my life. You know, you can't drive the same car forever. You know, that's
sure.
Leases are a good thing.
Is this something that you did that you made a point of saying we want to do something different with this record, or
absolutely.
That come organically through with working with Ross? Or?
I think it was something that for me, I knew going into this band when I was asked to join, I knew that the first record had to be us proving our worth and us proving who we are, and then the next record was going to be the record, the record where I could really do something outside of what I've always done, which is I had been there for years. I've been wanting to do this record for a long time now. I've gotten about as far as I'm going to get in the metal community, and that's I was very happy with where I was at, but now it's time to push myself. I'm a musician, man. I need to grow. I need to learn. I need to learn how to do this. You know, I need to make my mistakes. I need to fall into the mud and get back up. You know, that's.
Did you agree with that, Mark, when you were writing? Or?
Absolutely. I mean, challenging ourselves and also going into it wanting to challenge the metal community, where it's like we see a stagnancy that happens where it is affordable to record this, or it's it makes sense to just, you know, record with the same person that we recorded with last time, or do things that are very safe, and then, you know, metalheads and the metal community, they kind of do, they grow like an ownership of the music they like. It's, this is my music, I own this. And with us, it's like, you know, I know and we know that people feel like they really are connected and own our music. But at the same time, we connect with all our fans so much. We know them. It's like we're a niche band. We hang out with our fans. Mm-hmm. We know a lot of these people. Yeah. And we know that they're more open than that. And
absolutely.
And that gave us like this confidence where it's just like, dude, like we have written these records and always said, you know, we'll do this kind of thing on the next record. You know, we'll work on something like that on the next one. This one, let's keep it safe still. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it was just kind of, it was that time. It was, let's go into this. We have a group of guys that are all in good, you know, positions in our lives, which is unique because we've came from just a wild roller coaster of heavy metal and
sure.
debauchery. And like now it's like, all right, we're grown. We can actually put a schedule in front of us, go commit to each other to all show up in a jam space and work on music together and encourage each other to test ourselves, push ourselves. And, it was just that time to, like you said, you know, spread our wings, mm-hmm. show everything that we can potentially accomplish with music, not just inside of this death metal box that we're, you know, real hesitant
to stay within.
Talk is Jericho.
Let's talk about that, though. You mentioned to Eddie, you said when you came in, you take the blame. You talk about kind of the first record after, and what we're talking about is your original singer, Mitch Lucker, passed away,
mm-hmm.
yeah. which you're talking about the worst thing that can happen for your brother, for your band, for all these different things. It seems like it would be a good time, like you mentioned, you bring Eddie in the band, you do the record, kind of try and get back on, you know, back on this planet. Now this record can be a real true band effort, because I'm sure the first record you did after Mitch's passing is not easy to do at all.
No, definitely not.
Yeah, that was rough.
That was where we weren't playing it safe by doing something traditional.
Yeah, you're just trying to regroup, right?
We were showing the world that something so tragic was not going to stop us. I mean, the name of the record is You Can't Stop Me, and we didn't even title it that. It was Mitch's last words that he wrote is You Can't Stop Me.
Mm-hmm.
And to us, that's always been the precursor of why we should do it now and not on the next record.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't get a chance to do what they wanted to do on the next record with Mitch.
Mm-hmm.
And like, even saying that right now, I'm choking up a little bit, because it's true. It's a fact. It's like, we didn't get that chance. We didn't get a chance to hear what Mitch really wanted to do with music. You know, it's something that's stifled now. And it's all because we were playing it safe, catering to a music business, catering to a fandom, catering to all the things that brought us away from wanting to be a musician to begin with. Like, I wanted to play death metal and be in a death metal band because I didn't care about record sales, and I didn't care about the music industry. I didn't care about that. I wanted to be punk rock. I wanted the kids that felt left out in school, the kids who felt judicated, I want them to feel at home with our music. And that's what brought me here. So why the hell did I become this machine to this machine slave to this death metal. It was completely backwards in my head, and it broke my heart. And what you're hearing on this record is that broken heart, is the 10 years of basically slamming my head against the wall and wondering why things weren't coming up daisies, you know? It breaks my heart still to this day. It's really hard to talk about. But here we are.
Right.
We're here to show you that you can pick your head up after something so tragic. You can find comfort in all the mistakes in the world, and you can grow from it, and you can become better, you can become stronger, and that's what this record is as well.
So how was that for you, Mark? Obviously, you talk about, like, that's how, sucky as this is, 12, that's how I became familiar with Suicide Silence, was because you read about this on Blabbermouth, and then I'm calling Shadows. I'm like, do you know these guys? They're from Huntington, just like you, and obviously Matt had went through it with Rev, you know, Metallica with Cliff, and the perfect example, AC/DC, Bon Scott, obviously passed away right when they're at the cusp of getting to the next level.
Yeah.
Kind of the same thing that happened to you.
Exact same thing, really. Like, we had just signed a deal to Nuclear Entertainment, which was the new Nuclear Blast with Monty Connor running it, where like Roadrunner and Nuclear came together. Yeah. It was huge for us. It was like pretty much our dreams were coming true. You know, we'd already released three records. We were about to go, you know, work on our senior record, which would be our Injustice for All, you know, like following these footsteps. And we were ready to do something that was more on the progressive tip, just like Injustice, or and we were going to make that shift into doing the integration of all of our influence and do something so much different and really hammer out what we'd been trying to get out of our hearts and souls for a while. And Mitch was the one that was really leading us as far as, you know, pushing the limits and really critiquing us. He would be like a lot of singers. Eddie is very much like this. He's at the rehearsal. Mitch was the same way. Mitch would come and he would listen to his jam. He wouldn't necessarily say anything, but if it sucked, he'd be like, no, let's not do that shit. But if it was something really out there, he was always wanting us to do the most testy kind of things. Testies. You know,
we really are 12 years old.
I know, we are, dude.
Sucks to suck, dude.
You know, and as serious as a conversation can be, like, it just goes that way.
You gotta throw that in there. What you're saying.
But, like, it is. It's rough because, you know, him and I were really working together on all the music and working on, you know, starting to work on lyrics together and put together ideas of how to further take our artistry and how to really just challenge people, exactly what we're doing on this record. It was him that wanted to lead that role. And, you know, he was coming into his own, realizing he was a trendsetter. You know, people were doing a lot of things he was doing. And, you know, for a while it was an identity kind of thing, starting to believe you are what, you know, the industry or fans start to think you are. And, you know, right before he passed, he was really starting to feel comfortable with doing whatever he felt was good for himself, which was like that first step towards, you know, being creatively free. And we worked
in 2011. I remember specifically, like, the day we were in Virginia and I was talking to Mitch. I was like, dude, what's next for you guys? You guys are pretty much reigning this deathcore world. You guys are on the top. You're selling a bunch of records. You guys are killing it in all of your live shows. You've been killing it for 10 years. What's next for you guys? Like, what are you up to? And one of the first things he said, he goes, I really want to step out of myself. Mm-hmm. I'm taking vocal lessons. I really want to incorporate more melody into who we are. I mean, and I was at that point, the Black Crown was out and I had already heard it. I had already heard from No Time to Bleed, them taking ethereal steps, you know, steps into where there's a bridge in the song, and all of a sudden it's super spacey and this tripped out awesome thing in deathcore, which didn't exist, you know, and then the Black Crown came out, and I was like, this record right here, for me personally, I was a fan of that record. I thought that record was really showing their songwriting skills. It showed how they could jump off of a cliff and bring it right back to heaviness.
It was the first time that we had decided to give ourselves to the idea that the music is going to treat people. Like I'd said earlier, like when we first started really going, you know, we wanted to piss people off and offend people. And once we offended everybody we could offend, we're like, well, now let's try and, I mean, for lack of a better term, help people. Let's give our gift and gift this to the people that are going to hear it and really hope to, you know, help people out. So we came up with like being positively negative, you know? So like when we have a song that's called F*** Everything, really like, well, F*** everything, like look around you, appreciate what you have. Like none of this bullshit that's going to, that bothers you matters. Like mm-hmm. we were trying to, you know, appeal to people and get them out of a negative space and bring them to something that they could, you know, work them through their issues and be a therapy session through music. And yeah, I mean, it's sad to think that, you know, we really don't know what would have happened. You know, You Can't Stop Me ended up being the perfect record for us post Mitch coming out and being triumphant, staying with that positively negative kind of
Our back in black.
Right. People loved it. People really responded to it well. But for us as creators, as people that, you know, strive to just always be testing ourselves, like it was fulfilling for a little, but then it was
about halfway through the touring cycle, I was already leaning towards, hey, we need to get in the studio and write this next record. Like this was fun. This is great. Mm-hmm. I appreciate all the fans, and it's gotten bigger than I would have ever expected.
Totally.
Especially for me. Like, it's the biggest platform I'd ever had. Mm-hmm. And I was just, at that point, I saw how we were all unsatisfied. I saw the band yearning to put something else out, to do something different, to really step into Suicide Silence. Mm-hmm. And take it to where it was already geared up to go.
You have to make a record, like you said, to kind of take that step from, you know, the grieving process and kind of move forward. And once that record comes out and is done, now it's time to really be the new version of Suicide Silence. Exactly. with Eddie as the singer.
Yeah,
when you first find out about Mitch's passing, Mark, is your initial reaction is we have to continue on? I don't want to do this anymore. You know, like I said, not only from
I didn't even really think about the band. Mm-hmm. You know, really, like the place that we were at as individuals, I thought about sobriety. Right. I thought about I got to clean myself up. I got to fix this shit because there had been something in my head for over, you know, 3 years at that point where I'm like, one day I'm gonna have to fix some shit that I'm doing to myself right now. Mm-hmm. And Mitch, you know, me and him were like ragers, like. Mm-hmm. And raging. Mm-hmm. And you know, people can say like Mitch was an alcoholic and Mitch, you know, was a drug addict or whatever. It was like, no, Mitch was just doing the same shit that everybody does when we're, you know, in that position. We're on tour, we're drinking, we're hanging out. Mm-hmm. And it just became an everyday lifestyle for us. And you know, when I heard that, you know, it wasn't even that Mitch had passed, it was that Mitch got in a wreck. And that the only details were really like there's multiple dislocations and he's in the hospital right now. And I melted. Hmm. And I was like an hour away from Orange County. I went home. It was Halloween night. And I was going to go to sleep early so that I could go to the studio the next day. And Mitch was going to record vocals for these two songs that we had worked on. One of them was what ended up being You Can't Stop Me. But obviously he never made it to that sesh. And it was just, I was falling apart, you know, as a person. Mm-hmm. The band, I didn't give a f***ing shit. I could care less. It was like, I was really worried and scared at that point that like everything that I had been afraid of as far as like my health and like things that I might be getting out of my control, now it was proving itself. And mm-hmm. I was really just so lost. And, and then once it was, once, you know, I drove up to Orange County and he had passed before I even got up there, I was just in shambles, dude. Like, so I knew I was at a point of needing to rebuild my entire world. Mm-hmm. And I was like identity crisis type thing. It's like, how do I do this? I was so, the band was not on my radar. Mm-hmm. But once we've shifted our attention to his daughter and thinking about, okay, like Mitch is gone, like what can we do for him? We at least had, I and the group had something to put our energy towards, which was the memorial show that we did and opening and starting the Kennedy Lucker Foundation, raising money for her so that when she turns 18, she can go to college and be taken care of, because that was his number one. That mm-hmm. that was when we were touring, why we toured so hard, and everything that was really driving the band was Mitch's daughter, him being a father.
Yeah, it was like 2006 when he came up to me and we were on tour, and he's like, dude, I'm gonna have a kid.
Yeah, that was sudden. We thought the band was over.
I was like,
oh shit, he's having a kid.
I was like, dude, our guitarist just had a kid too, and I don't think he's gonna tour that much. What are you gonna do? And him being like, nah, dude, I'm gonna take this band to the very, very top, and I need to do this for her. Like, now I have a purpose. I was like, oh shit. And I'd never really seen anybody at that point do that.
So you knew the band and toured with the band, because your band was Shall Perish, right?
My old band was All Shall Perish. We did a tour in 2006. It was their first national tour and my first national tour with All Shall Perish. I had just joined the band, and we had just recorded The Price of Existence. It's the name of that record. And it was 56 shows in 60 days.
Wow.
And
it was sick.
It was honestly
not so much sick for the singers, but
but you know what? We were also jazzed. I was 22, 23 years old.
Yeah.
And I was just like on fire. Everything about what I did needed to be full bore. It was wartime, man. Mm. It was time to attack the world with our sound.
And none of us had catalogs of music, so we were really only playing like half hour.
Yeah, totally.
One album each.
Yeah, I'm all talking like I was on stage, really sweating it out.
It was pulling a Springsteen set or something.
Yeah.
That was 30 minutes.
we were wham bam, thank you, ma'am. But it was that tour that really. I mean, Mitch and I got matching tattoos on that tour. We were real cute. And hey, bro, we'll get a tattoo, like matching tattoos first, and then the whole tour package, you'll get it, right? Nobody else got it. And my band actually gave me shit for a long time. They were like, huh, well, who has a matching tattoo with another guy, Lord of Gayness?
I do, too. Me and Shadows have the Halloween pumpkin.
Oh, nice. Yeah,
dude, so. Marcus Steiger would probably kiss that tattoo. He loves Halloween.
Does he?
Halloween's a Nuclear Blast band.
Of course. Right? So, there you go. So me and Shadows are huge Halloween fans. So
that's awesome.
I feel your pain.
Yeah. So it was that. It was that. That tour that really solidified our friendship, and we always had this kind of friendship rivalry going on, where I wanted my band to be as big, and I wanted for us to really have that kind of work ethic to where we tour all the time.
Mitch always wanted us to be like more progressive, like All Shall Perish.
So it was this awesome rivalry that went on, and that's why I'm in the band.
Seems like you're the perfect guy to step in.
There was no tryouts. There was no anything. Once the decision was made that's like, all right, we want to do the band again, and once our other guitar player who started the band, which was funny that he started the band and Mitch basically joined the band without telling anybody who was going to join. There was another singer, and Mitch got on stage one show, their second show, sang, and was like, hey, this guy's not going to be in the band anymore. And that was how, like, Mitch got in the band. Once Garza, our other guitar player, he was like, if we change the name, like, I'm going to quit. And once I heard him say that, I was like, well, that means that there's passion. That means we're still here. Like, mm-hmm. let's get it going again. And then Eddie's name was thrown in the hat, and there was no other option. It was just like, if he'll do it, then we're going to do that.
And how was that for you, having to leave the band to come to Suicide?
He made us wait a month.
He
told us yes or no.
Playing hard to get.
It was a time for that. My band at the time, we had gone, I mean, pretty much the whole original lineup, except for the bass player and myself, had quit. Touring had become a little bit too much. Our guitarist, who had a wife and kids and a job and a business, t-shirt printing business, he was seeing the weight of having to be in a band when your heart's somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
And the other members just couldn't deal with another member in the band, and they quit. So we kind of had this like skeleton band put together of really amazing musicians, and we were still doing something, but everybody was fighting the grain. Everybody was, you know, we wanted to tour as comfortably as possible, but we're a band that doesn't sell more than 100,000 CDs. I'm sorry, guys, you're going to have to tour in a van and trailer, and you're going to have to work your ass off. That's just part of being an underground band.
Mm-hmm.
The fear was overbearing. I had a job, and I was already booking shows, so I had already kind of given up on touring and being in this
a sensational band.
We had seen it too. That's the reason why his name even got brought up, because we heard that Ben, who was who he's talking about, who had the t-shirt company, we heard he quit All Shot Parish, and we're like, about shit, Ben quit? Like, that band's kind of falling apart. Maybe Eddie would want to do this.
Mm. And it really was that. It really was that time. And sure enough, as soon as I told my guys, and the reason I made him wait is because I needed to talk to my guys first, and I put it to them like this. I was like, look, we can remain a band. Everybody can do what they want to do, is have jobs on the side and treat this like a side project. This is the perfect opportunity for that. And when I made the decision, all of a sudden they went up in arms and they're like, no, we need to take this band extremely seriously. And then they kicked me out.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so yeah, exactly. So for me, it was extremely like emotionally, I was in a place.
Years,
it was
right?
My baby. And for them to be like, no. And I remember signing the contract that was signing me out of the band and being like, I'm literally breaking up with my band right now, and here you guys go. I broke out in hives.
Wow.
Because the pressure from the fans of my announcement, and then having to sign this contract, and then the pressure of like making sure that I was doing something correct and not doing something that was gonna seem forced. The pressure of all that was just, it was really heavy at the time.
Yeah.
And it was good for me because it kept me passionate and kept me kind of in line, didn't let me kind of fall into some kind of big-headed, you know, egotistical, you know, mumbo-jumbo that people can fall into when you get attention all of a sudden. It kept me grounded, my own self, you know, my own disturbed way of dealing with things. It kept me floored, and I went into that studio about as humble as possible. You know, I just lost everything but gained everything at the same time.
How did the fans react when they heard that you were in the band?
About how they're reacting right now to the new music.
Okay, now it's all your fault.
It's all my fault. You know, it's how dare you? Who do you think you are? I got the real crazy off the deep end fans started threatening my life. They threatened my mother's life, my family.
Damn,
they're like,
we're gonna
wipe your name off the face of the earth. Type, Don Corleone
that support
type.
You though, too.
I'm saying that was the initial reaction,
and then
the support was also overwhelming. It was like, we love your old band. I wasn't a fan of Suicide Silence, but now you're in the band, and I'm going to stick behind you guys. I back you guys 100%. So there was also that, which,
because the thing about that happens, it's not like, okay, I don't know, the first one that pops into mind is like, okay, Journey. So Steve Perry's still alive, but they've got another guy singing. Maybe I can understand
Arnell,
right? But you're talking about somebody that's passed away. Being mad that you got a new singer, it's like, well, what do you want us to do? Like, should we wait until this Dio hologram thing is more perfected and go out with that as the singer?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because I don't understand that concept of yelling, you know, like when Randy Rhoads dies and Jakey Lee comes in, Jakey Lee, Randy forever. Well, he's dead, dude.
Yeah,
what do you want me to do?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. It's kind of a way to test. It's testing somebody's strength, which is kind of badass in a way. You know, you're like, hey, dude, are you really a badass? Like the dude that I know was a badass. Mitch was a badass.
Mm-hmm.
So this is what people are going to check you, and if you are threatened by it, if it breaks you down, if it makes you want to run away, then you were never meant to be there to begin with, and that person is absolutely right. But if you prove them wrong, that person is going to support you harder than anybody else.
Exactly.
It's also similar to right now. We made a lane change in our sound, and we made a complete image change with our singer. Not at all does Eddie look like Mitch. So when our fans are seeing it, it's like, you got someone who doesn't look like Mitch at all. That's the first thing they're going to think. It's like, this isn't Mitch. You know, like, you're never going to be able to do what Mitch does. And they're judging it as something that they're used to, something that they hold and that is theirs. Mm-hmm. And Mitch was, you know, a lot of people's favorite front man. And to you know, replace, I quote, it's like to have to replace. It's like, we're not trying to replace Mitch. Like, we're going to move forward with him, you know, still with us, and we're going to keep Suicide Silence alive for Mitch.
Yeah.
It's in no way in hell would Mitch ever want us to stop because he died.
Yeah.
You know, me and him made the pact. We'll never quit this band.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not going to quit because Mitch.
Nor would he expect that.
No. So it's ultimately for us, I'm glad that we can realize this. It's just good that we have people that care so much about what we are up to.
Passionate fans.
And when it comes down to it, like we do keep ourselves in a higher regard when it comes to what we're going to do, because this is our, you know, our craft, our baby, you know. So our fans are right there below it. We care a lot about them and we're here for them. But on the same token, like, we are still doing these massive changes and massive moves, and we will continue to do this to test them, mm-hmm. to make sure that, you know, you love this, we love it more than you, I promise. Yeah. And we're going to show you.
Trust us.
Yeah, yeah. We're going to show you how,
like,
what it's all
band,
about.
And we're not letting you down.
I don't know.
That's what this record is. You know, now you've seen the backstory and you see where the hell we come from. It helps you understand what this record is about. Mm-hmm. It is that. It's us showing the fans that even if we're experimenting, if we're doing something outside of our box, that it's who we are. We've always been this. We're here to challenge. We're here to make a statement. We're here to be a band that doesn't fall in line. And honestly, the backlash, the petitions online that we were talking about, that's, like he said, it's proving that the fans have a passion and that they're there. And I back the fact that some kid is out there going, no, I'm going to fight for what I think is right. It's right for you right now. That's mm-hmm. fine. You can feel that way. This record allows you to feel that way. It's giving the people a voice in a way. Sure. It gives me a voice. I'm here to say, no, what you're saying is cool. And I'm going to fight that. I'm going to fight that this is one of the truest forms of art that I've ever put out. I'm very proud of the work that I did on this. I worked extremely hard on myself and dove extremely deep into my like my sub-psyche to bring sounds that come from my influences, come from, you know, my Mike Patton influences, my Jonathan Davis influences, my Chino Moreno influences, my Corey Taylor influences, all those things that Ross Robinson embodies in so many ways. And I finally got a chance to work with this guy. Why the hell would I sit on my hinds and write something that I know I can do, knock it out of the park, 100%? Mm-hmm. Why would I do that? No, I'm here to challenge myself, just like you should be challenging yourself every day. That's what life is about. If not, you're not living. I'm here to live, baby.
How was the first show you played with Eddie, and for you, Eddie, to sing with Suicide Solution for the first Suicide Solution.
Suicide Solution.
I still had Ozzy on the brain and Randy Suicide Silence.
The first show we did was at Soundwave in Melbourne.
Oh, what a great tour that was, man.
Yeah, it was really good. It was 2014.
Yeah, me too.
That's like the greatest tour of all time, I believe.
It was a traveling stadium tour.
Yep. Yeah.
Like a festival, but you'd travel with everybody. It's like summer camp.
And way Green bigger Day than any American sevenfold. Festival.
Like the craziest.
That was Metallica and Blink.
Yeah.
You know?
The thing for me on that tour was, Oh my God! This is not. I didn't get a trial run. We didn't do anything in small in the States first. You know, I'm not used to this. What's going on? I the biggest example of shows that I had played in that nature was, you know, festivals in Europe or the festival run on Mayhem in 2011. That was about as big as shows. The biggest shows I'd ever played in my life.
Mm-hmm. And here, we threw him to the wolves.
Yeah, right.
We knew we were doing that.
Right.
Too.
Oh yeah.
We wanted to do that.
See how he does.
Yeah, we made the plan. We're like, all right, we're gonna do this. Soundwave should be our first tour back because we have great Australian fans. Mm-hmm. They're diehard. We're like more celebrities in Australia for some reason than most places in the world. And just like going there, people love Suicide Silence. So we knew that if it's like we bring Eddie, we throw him out there in front of all these people that are going to have hold very high expectations. If he kills it, then that's great. And he murdered it. And everybody was there to pay attention. And it was really a cathartic kind of thing because, well, one, it was the first time that I'd played a show sober in a very long time.
Wow. Yeah.
And then just surrounded by friends on stage. And it was like, first time I got to look over and see Eddie and not see Mitch, which was pretty intense but awesome.
Mm-hmm.
But then looking to my right, you know, on the side of the stage and seeing just all of my friends that, you know, I've known forever and have always been in my corner and always helped me through Mitch's passing.
And from other bands.
From other bands. Yeah. you know, and having industry them there and everybody and industry people, you know, literally tears and things like that. It was very much like, all right, this is happening. And then we got to like, you know, somewhere in the set, wherever the Wall of Death was, and then just watching like the crowd going insane. And we're like, and it was just like, all right, this is all really, this is it. This is the beginning of whatever we're doing now, which is, you know, feeling like the highest mountaintops we've really been on in our whole career is just this, you know, this whole process of
sorry for laughing.
No, of course,
but
it's all good.
You're talking here, like, and all I'm thinking is right before going on stage, our drummer had literally the biggest technical foul up that you could ever, like, we almost did not go on stage on time. And you know, Soundwave,
sure.
If you don't go on stage on time, you missed your set.
Missed your set, yeah.
So my first.
What happened?
Oh, so.
Trigger module blew.
Oh, gotcha.
Our trigger module blew, and I'm sitting here like focusing and like eye of the tiger. And I look up, and Alex is going, oh my God! Oh my God, we're not going to go on stage! What's going on right now?
You're like, what?
And I'm like,
what?
And then you're like, what? Can I please go home right now? And that was that. He's saying all this is like grandiose and awesome. And I'm like, yeah, but I was tripping balls, dude. I was freaking the out. It was really, really, really scary for me. And then I go on stage and everything goes away.
Right,
and it's
sure.
like, and it's like money.
Once
go
that
time.
First note hits, you're fine.
Yeah, dude.
We had to be Eddie's support system when he first joined the band. Like, we were all very much we'd been home for a while, you know, losing Mitch and then getting this like time off and to write a record. Like, it was the longest time away from the road we've had in 9 years or something. So we were refreshed, you know, we were very much at the top of our game, and having him come in, getting all this criticism, all this pressure, all these interviews, people just putting him on the spot about everything. He was, you know, rightfully so, you know, pretty, you know, nervous,
yeah.
You know, and we had to be strong, you know, like, and just support him through everything. And everything was going pretty well. And Soundwave got locked in. But then, yeah, when Alex blew the trigger before the first show, that was you were freaking out.
I was like, what is going on? And then literally that could have been the best thing that ever happened, because at that point you're like, okay, cool, we can fight through anything, like,
right, if you can get through that.
If we got through this, it's like 2 minutes before going on stage, it was we had already done the hands in. We were like we were fired up to all right, you guys ready, go team blue, blah, ever give me a hell yeah. Yeah, let's go. Ah, wait, my trigger module's blown.
What? We're on 2 minutes. What?
and there's like 10,000, 15,000 kids waiting. That was the part that made me nervous. It was just like, if we don't go on stage, the blowback's not going to go on Alex Lopez for messing up, or like, it's. Eddie Ramito was a pussy and didn't go on stage.
That's what people were getting.
Yeah, so that's where my mind was at. And then from there, it was, I don't remember the middle. I remember that moment, and I remember today.
Coming off the stage triumphantly.
Yeah, it's like, it's been one hell of a ride. Mm-hmm. And literally, it's taught me so much about myself. I've learned to let go on stage. I've been adopted by Suicide Silence. And Suicide Silence wasn't just Mitch. It's a way of being. It's a way of life. It's a positive revolution inside of yourself. It's a centered kind of woo-woo way of looking at things. It's like, hey, dude, like, yeah, you're coming at me all crooked, but guess what, man? I still love you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and that right there, it's like, hey, don't be afraid of anything. Have some balls and really do
right.
what you're set
sure,
out
sure,
to
sure.
do.
And we've been criticized our whole career
exactly.
for not being death metal enough, you know, and Mitch not looking like a traditional death metal singer.
Which he didn't. Yeah.
He did not at all. So that's where the deathcore thing came from. People didn't want to call us death metal, and we wanted to be a death metal band, you know, when we first started. So us getting called deathcore and being like, just, you know, pigeonholed, you know, mm-hmm, as mm-hmm. most bands don't want to be, we were
right.
like, you're this. And that's what people told us. So it's like, us being told what we were, like, we had to be super thick-skinned and just, you know, back up what we had and just murder everything and just be the most brutal and just slay. So, like, you know, when Eddie came in,
that helps you a lot, man. When that's what you have to be, because that's what the band represents. It
flows into your veins.
Sure.
And you become
that.
Position,
yeah.
And I'm sure enough, I'm watching videos from 2014 when I first started playing with the band to the Korn tour that we did in October of 2015. Oh, sorry, no.
Yeah.
Korn tour is 2015?
Yeah.
God.
Did you see your progression?
Hello, kids. Yeah. My mind has gone into Apple shit. Basically, seeing those videos and then seeing how we've advanced or how we've become more comfortable with each other and become a unit, it blows my mind,
yeah,
even.
Yeah, yeah.
And I realize that it's become a coat that I wear.
Mm-hmm.
And it's become a coat that we all wear together at the same time. It's a really cool thing, man. And it gave us the basis. It gave us the basis to be where we're at today. It changed my life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, being in this band has made me become a stronger person and a better person.
Which you would have to. There's a lot of pressure put on you. But
absolutely.
Just a few more things I have to bring up. We were in the studio the other day doing the Fozzy record, and we were just, like, looking at videos. Like, let's look at some different videos. So we looked at Garden of Eden, Guns N' Roses, mm-hmm. how that's all filmed kind of like in a fisheye lens.
Yep.
And then Rich Ward was like, you got to see this one, the Suicide Silence for...
You only live once
in the shooting range.
Yeah,
unbelievable video. The band is playing, and then all these people, some kids, some chicks, just take out guns and just start just killing you guys. Yep. Blood packs everywhere, yep. But you never die. You just keep rocking.
Yep.
What a great video! 55 million views I saw today.
Yeah, it's insane.
And that idea came from all the criticism, like I was speaking about, like all the people that were shooting at us. We were kind of. Placing them in little areas of like, okay, these people, you know, they hate on Suicide
Silence.
Here's the fan. Yeah. There's my ex-girlfriend literally shooting me.
Just getting off on it. Yeah. Son of a bitch.
Yeah. And then to end it all, like the priest blowing us up with the bazooka.
So great.
Yeah. Cool. It was all just kind of a camped out, like not really a serious.
But such a great
thing.
Idea though, yeah. With the blood packs and everything. Yep. I mean, that must've been kind of fun.
Yeah. So much fun. So much fun.
To this day, still talk about the blood.
Yeah, well, because at the end of the shoot, the floor was like an inch thick of blood, and it was fun. I mean, it was all, you know, we're playing, and we had the parts where, you know, the director was like, all right, this is where we're going to shoot, so it's like 3, 2, 1, like, act to it, and then we had a CO2 shot, you know, line up our pants or whatever, and they just shoot it off and explode with blood and just, like, ham it up and act all crazy, and it was a lot of just the only thing we had planned was we're going to be in here and we're going to get shot at. Everything that happens in the video was all just us kind of riffing and coming up with different ideas. You know, getting shot in the leg, falling on the ground and doing the guitar solo. It was also an intense long day. We started at 6 and didn't get done in the morning, didn't get done till midnight. And, you know, just to furthermore how badass Mitch was as a performer, he threw himself at that video and had to go to the hospital after because he had, like, his neck was so displaced from headbanging
so
all
rocking.
Day. Like, that was
really, really good. If you haven't seen it, go check it out. It's on YouTube.
Yeah.
It's a great piece of work. But
yeah.
Last question, it's one for each of you. First of all, your favorite song on Suicide Solution, which is hard because I know they're all your children. What is the one that stands out for you?
Suicide Solution again.
Sorry. Now I got on my head. Good time. See, I thought Suicide Silence is the name of the band, ladies and gentlemen. What? I thought I was booking Suicide Solution.
Guys,
call my agent. Call my manager.
We're per fans' request, we're changing our name to Suicide Solution.
Jericho knows. Yeah. And there's gonna be a song called Suicide Solution on the Suicide Solution album.
I'm Zach Mild.
Totally. You look a little bit like a skinny Edge too.
Yeah.
From the wrestler. Not Edge from YouTube.
That's crazy. You're telling me that because I've gotten that before, but never from
you. Kind of do have it. Even facially. You kind of. As soon as you walk in, like, he kind of looks like Edge.
Dude,
looks
like Adam. He's a handsome.
He's
guy.
He's a handsome devil. Handsome devil. Favorite song on Suicide Silence, the new record.
My favorite song, I would have to say the song Conformity.
Mm-hmm.
It's our ballad. It was like we went into it kind of. In my mind, I was really, really pumped on doing a ballad. I've always wanted to do my Every Rose Has Its Thorn. You know,
nothing else matters.
Yeah, the Mr. Big song. You know what I mean?
To be with you,
dude. Mm. That
great guitar solo.
That is like
amazing.
That to me will forever hold. you know, the VH1 video, like place in my heart. Right. So it's like I've always wanted to do that. A song that you can do just acoustic and vocals. And Garza wrote the riff.
Mm-hmm.
And when he wrote that riff, I was like, oh my God, like I felt at peace. I felt like whole. And everything else just flowed from there. And watching the song come together, the chorus coming together per a conversation with Ross and I talking about the state of the music industry, the state of people in general, how complacent we are to the news, to politics. As soon as somebody says something, you're like, oh yeah, I agree with that. And now that's my new belief system.
Mm-hmm.
And beliefs are cages, if you want to get ethereal with me. And once you put that cage over yourself, you're conforming to something, even though you could be the most nonconformist human being. And conformity is about that. It's kind of taking, it's a joke, it's a poke at what the metal scene has become. It's become so conformist. It's become so contrived, especially the underground metal scene. It's like, you're not allowed to do this, you're not allowed to do that. And this song is the two middle fingers in the air to that song. Us literally putting our hands in the air. And
what about live? Which one of Mitch's songs do you like to sing? Because obviously they're probably very personal in a lot of ways to him, and you've had to adopt those lyrics and make them your own as you sing them.
Of course. The song Unanswered for me will always be a very, very close to home song, because I'm not atheist, I'm agnostic. And that song isn't denied.
What is agnostic?
Agnostic is the belief that there is no exact way of being able to put words or your finger on religion.
Atheist is you don't believe in God.
Atheist believe is very scientific. It's gotcha. Like our bodies do this, and when you die, you turn off and you go in the ground and you become soil. And agnostic is our minds are not capable of understanding.
I understand.
So it's
agnostic front. now I know what it means.
Yeah.
After all these years,
and that song is more agnostic than it is atheist. It's a challenge to God to show himself. I'm here. I'm a human being. Obviously there is a God out there. Show yourself, be here with me, because I'm lost. And that song is a very heavy duty song for me. It gets the crowd chanting, where is your God? Where is your God? Where's your God? That to me is like one of the most powerful songs live, because everybody knows it. And then the song Disengage is also for me, it's very fun to play. It's the song we do the Wall of Death on, and the opening riff, it just gets me pumped. It's like taking a shot of coffee. It's like, here we go.
How about you, Mark? Favorite song on the new record and favorite song to play live?
Conformity also is probably my favorite, but since he explained it already, I would go on the other spectrum of our kind of ballady song, the song that everybody calls my song. It's a song called Dying in a Red Room.
Actually called Planet Heilman.
Yeah, my last name is Heilman. And everyone was calling it Planet Heilman when we were working on it, because it's very spacey, and the main riff is something that came to me while I was on a wild trip one time, like in the back lounge of our bus.
Going into Canada, actually.
Yeah, about to go to Canada. There was a couple of things that were floating around on the bus that weren't allowed to be on the bus when we were crossing over the...
So we ingested them.
they were on the organic side. So I was just in the back lounge playing this little acoustic guitar that I have, and this, not even the riff came out, this was just a technique that I had never really done, which is just a funny little thing. And if you listen to the song, you'll hear it in the guitar riff. It's hypnotizing. It's just very circular. It's just breathing and circular. And that was the first time that I ever tapped into a very natural state of my playing that's not technical and wild. It's something simple and really cool to hear. And the fact that it turned into a song, I remember we were working on the song, and I remember Garza asking, like, where do you see the song going? And I'm like, see, it just go. It's just going. It's not going to go anywhere. It's going to stay where it is, and it's going to kind of make you feel weird for being there.
Yeah.
And it's got just a feeling to it, a vibe to it. And Eddie's vocals are the first time he's ever, it's all clean vocals throughout the whole entire song. Very melodic and driving, and probably some of the coolest drum beats that Alex has ever done. It's just a cool step for us, you know.
Right.
And it was also when Brandon Boyd, cool name drop from Incubus, was in the studio with us. We were showing him all these songs, and you know, he was semi-familiar with our old stuff, and he heard that song, and he was like, man, like, it's really obvious when a band is, you know, steps out of what they're used to doing but are very comfortable in something else. And he was like, this song is really, really good. And then it just, like, exploded me. I'm like, oh, my God, like, thanks, that's so cool.
But how about live?
And then favorite live, Disengage, like he was saying, that song is Mitch talking about, you know, one day there will be no more pain, and everything it will slip away, and basically talking about dying and talking about the day that he whenever, you know, he dies. And he was obsessed with that shit. He was obsessed with, you know, what it was, what happens when you die, and he was obsessed with, you know, aliens and what the hell humans are and all this stuff. So like that song was one of those songs when we were writing all our old music, was one of those things where we were trying to step outside and do something new and a little different. And it ended up being a song we wrote in a day that's a little bit different than any of our other songs, and still was one of those jump off points to where we are now, like just experimenting and going different places. And I am constantly just thinking about him when we're playing that song. So
that's great, man. Well, it's good talking to you guys. And the record is Suicide Silence. The band is Suicide Silence, although you can call them Suicide Solution.
Sure.
Yeah, as well. If you want to start a real petition, start the petition to change the name to Suicide Solution.
Chris Jericho gets credit for that. So
I want 10%, kids. Thanks,
our new manager. Yeah.
Thank you.
Chris Jericho.
There you go. Thanks.
Hell yeah.
All right, the new self-titled Suicide Silence album came out today, and you definitely want to check out this record if you're a fan of the band or if you've never heard them. Forget the petition. The album's out anyways. Nothing's going to stop them. And even if you sign that stupid thing, why would you? I still urge you to give the new album a chance. All we are saying is give the album a chance. Hear for yourself how the guys challenge themselves to step out of their comfort zone and to try something new to grow as artists and musicians. Hey, man, I can definitely understand that. It's always good to reinvent yourself. It's always good to evolve as a performer, to evolve as a musician. I think they've done a great job. It's really a heavy album with a lot of great tunes. And wait till you see them do the album live. That'll convince you. Suicide Silence is touring now. They're out with Plague Vendor and Cameron Argon. You can see dates and get tickets at suicidesilence.net. Go check that out. You can get the new album on their website, and of course you can also get it on Amazon. And if you do that, please use the Talk is Jericho links. All my Amazon links are at podcast1.com. Click on the Killer Deals button in the top right corner of the page, then hit the Talk is Jericho button. And while I'm handing out thanks, big thanks for making the Jericho Network at Podcast One such a huge success. And for those of you who listened to the latest episode of Keeping It 100 with Conan, you know it's debuting this Monday. It's the newest show on the Jericho Network, The Raven Effect, featuring Raven. He's a crazy, crazy Scott Levy. You know Raven and his podcast Flock are going to take on everything pop culture, politics, conspiracies, current events, and as Raven says, general muckety muck. That's Raven for you. You're going to be well entertained this Monday and every Monday with the Raven Effect. I've been waiting for a long time to bring Raven aboard. I'm very excited to have him with me here on the Jericho Network. Go hit subscribe on iTunes now so you don't miss the big debut, and please go ahead and subscribe to all the great Jericho Network podcasts. We got 5 days every week, every weekday, Scary Awesomeness with Beyond the Darkness. Speaking of awesomeness, Team Tiger Awesome dropping new laughs every Sunday, and they were also on Talk is Jericho last week with High School Confidential on Wednesday. You got to check that out. Monday the Bully, Bad Haircuts, Worst Teachers, First Kiss, High School Bands. It's a very funny conversation about our high school years. And of course, Killing the Town with Storm and Cyrus. Lance did not like Festival of Friendship. I wrote him up. He's on notice. Any more shenanigans like that, not liking anything that I do, he's going to get fired. I've also got of course, Keep It 100 with Conan, of course, as well. The Jericho Network's monster flagship show. That's every Thursday. We got your week covered. And don't forget, I also got you covered. March 15th, 2017. It's the biggest podcast ever. Mick Foley finally joins Talk is Jericho. Just a few weeks away. We've been talking about it for a year. Thank you for that. Thank you for listening when you do. And keep listening right now for the 60-second AP News headlines coming up next and next weekend on Wednesday. We got legendary wrestling promoter Tony Candelo is going to be here. If you've ever heard anything about Canadian wrestling, Edge, Christian, Lance Storm, Don Callis, Chris Jericho, everybody, Rhino, everybody has worked for Tony Candelo and has the crazy stories. Dr. Luther has talked about him many times on my podcast and on Killing the Town. You do not want to miss Tony Candelo this Wednesday. Oh my gosh, this guy's been promoting for 40 years. From Stu Hart, Vince McMahon stories, Vern Gagne stories. That might be Tony Candelo calling right now. But he will be here on Wednesday. Thank you so much. We'll see you soon. Have a great weekend. Stay hard, stay hungry. Peace, love, and hugs, and a big yeah, boy.
You can download new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.